From the Korea Economic Institute in Washington, D.C., you're listening to Korean Context, news and analysis from the Korean Peninsula. Hello, and welcome to Korean Context, your source for all things Korea. I'm your host, Jenna Gibson. Before we get started with this episode, I just wanted to make a quick reminder that if you enjoy our content, please do subscribe to our podcast on your favorite podcast app. And if you like what we're doing, please also feel free to rate us on Apple Podcasts or wherever you've been listening to our episodes. It would be a really big help for us so that we can continue to bring you interesting interviews about Korea. Now, with that out of the way, let's get to the good stuff. Today, we have another one of the interviews that I conducted while I was in Seoul last month. This time, we're talking with education expert Vincent Flores about the number of Korean students choosing to study abroad in the United States, which has seen a decline in the last few years. Please enjoy this interview. So first of all, thank you so much for taking the time to talk with me while I'm here in Seoul. I know study abroad and Korean students comes up a lot in the discussions that I've had with people, both in the policy community and the education community in the United States. So I'm really interested to hear more from you about this. To get started, could you just introduce yourself and Education USA? What's the goal of the organization here in Seoul?
Sure. Education USA is a U.S. Department of State network of hundreds of advising centers in about 170 countries around the world. I think we have over 400 centers, and our job is to offer accurate, comprehensive, and current information about studying in the United States for international students all around the world, regardless of nationality. And we also serve U.S. higher education with their recruitment goals by offering briefings, on-the-ground information, and market information as well, so they can get to know the countries that they're trying to recruit in. And my name is Vincent Flores. I'm the Education USA Regional Educational Advising Coordinator for Northeast Asia and the Pacific, and that covers Japan, Korea, New Zealand, Australia, and the Pacific Islands.
Wow, that covers quite an area.
Just that little part of the ocean.
So when you're talking to Korean students who are thinking of studying in the U.S. or are exploring their options, what is the usual thing that you say to them? What is your spiel, I guess? And what would you say are the main benefits that you try to highlight for those students?
Sure. Korea is an interesting market in that you have students that really know about studying in the U.S. They know about it. Their parents have gone, or their family has gone, their friends have gone. And then you have the opposite side of the spectrum. You have people that don't know anything. So Education USA, generally, we start with the five steps to U.S. study. So we say step one, research your options, prepare for your test. And then step two, you would finance your studies, because think of the money before you even apply. And that's step three, complete your application. And then step four is to get your visa. And then step five is to prepare for your departure, because you can't just go. So we usually lead with that and try to give them a sense that it's a lot easier than they think. Some students think it's something that maybe they'll do in college, or maybe that it's for other people. So it really depends on the audience. If I can give a little context, in Seoul, it's how do you do it? Slightly outside of Seoul, it's, yeah, people really do it. And then further outside of Seoul or places that don't have the information, yes, you can. there's a big information gap, especially outside in the smaller towns.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I guess I should say that the reason we know each other is through the Fulbright program here in Korea. And one of the great things about the way they run Fulbright here is that they purposely put you into those smaller towns where there are maybe fewer resources, or, you know, some of the information that is available to students in Seoul is maybe not as available. So I definitely witnessed that myself, and I'm sure you did too. And I think that's really key here.
Yeah, for sure. I was placed in Pohang, and I ended up staying there for 8.5 years. And every year, every class, there were students that we could pick up, drop into an American school, American high school, college, and they would have been perfect. They would have been thriving. So I think getting into this job, particularly being based in Seoul, we started something, I call it Project Goose, Get Out of Seoul. So whenever U.S. higher education administrators came to recruit, we'd say, you know, look into the smaller towns and look at the talent that's not being tapped outside of the capital.
So Korea, for more than a decade, was the third largest sender of students to study in the United States, which is really quite remarkable considering its relatively small population and the fact that the number one and number two countries were India and China that have quite a lot more people. But it's been dropping off in the last few years, and last year Korea went down to fourth place after there was a big increase in students coming from Saudi Arabia. So my question is, especially given your experience talking to students here in Korea, what do you think might be some of the causes behind this decline?
Sure. It's a concern. We're looking at it from different angles. Then one is economics, and that's something that is always a concern. You know, it is rather expensive to study in the United States, and in Korea it seems to be that partly that economic times are not good for some people, and then the prices are going up, but also the perception that economic times are not good. So, you know, encouraging consumer spending is also an issue here in Korea. Another thing is the emergence of other options. So China is very big, Australia, New Zealand, and, you know, Canada, other countries are making big pushes. Even in Asia, there are other regional hubs that are emerging. And so there are other things. You know, we can't control economics. So, you know, if we did, we'd have another job. So we kind of look at the factors that we can affect. And I think one thing, just like I mentioned before about getting out of Seoul, I think the variables that we can influence is how we're reaching students. So students from the United States that are from Korea, we don't see them as much in higher educational promotions. We don't see them as much in videos. You know, there's 61,000 students, according to Open Doors, in the United States, but where are they? You know, and maybe it's that a lot of them don't want to necessarily be in videos or be highlighted, but they're really important to U.S. higher education, and we need to see their face. So that's one factor we can influence, and we encourage schools to do that. Another is encouraging more regional outreach diversity. So we've been trying to get students from other towns and regions more materials, more information, more presentations, and also trying to get U.S. higher education to look into going to public schools, going to science high schools, going to foreign language high schools, and not just reaching out to international and foreign schools, which is really the smallest demographic possible.
So you've given us some of an idea of what Education USA is doing here in Korea to try to reverse this trend. But I'm wondering also from the perspective of the colleges and universities themselves, is there anything they're also trying to do differently now that they've seen a steady decline in the number of Korean students who are interested in studying at their institutions?
They are. I think one thing to remember is that Korea has been such a huge sender for many, many years. It was one of the top senders, even in, I think, after 9/11. I think if you look at the stats, that the numbers were stable and even increased where others decreased, I think. So it was really a self-sustaining market, and even other aspects like the community college market, there isn't a concerted effort to encourage community colleges, but it is very, the network of Korean students is very, very powerful. So it was a really self-sustaining market, but I think, you know, partly because other markets emerged and they tried to diversify. I think at some point, U.S. higher education, I don't want to say they took it for granted, but I think it was a market that we could count on. And then, you know, economic times change, and slowly the trend started to reverse. So, but what we're seeing now is more attention to it. So if U.S. schools really want more Korean students, they're starting to come back more. They're starting to look into alternative ways to recruit. They're looking into different markets, different partnerships. So I think diversifying and shaking it up is really, really important here. And just giving it more attention, because Korea is one of those markets where that personal touch is important. You can do things virtually, but coming here, showing your face year after year is really how to do it. It doesn't necessarily have to be every year, but if it is, it's even better. So it really, I think it requires a personal touch and just to shake up the market a little bit. There was a pioneering spirit that drove the market in the beginning. And, you know, when there wasn't a lot of higher education attention here, when the transportation wasn't fantastic, People used to come here, ride buses, and you could get out to the countryside. And now we have the KTX. You know, you could get from Seoul to Busan in less than 3 hours. You could go almost anywhere in an air-conditioned bus that often has Wi-Fi. So there's really no excuse to not reignite that pioneering spirit that drove the market in the beginning.
When we're talking about study abroad, the image that pops into my mind is definitely college students. Maybe that's because that's pretty much when Americans spend time studying abroad. That's why I have that image. But I know in Korea, it's not just college students that we're talking about. There are a lot of younger students that study abroad, as well as graduate students and PhD students. So besides the general trend, is there any change in the type of students that are going abroad to study in the US? Or are there any other more specific changes that we should be aware of?
Sure. Education USA deals mainly with higher education, so those are the stats that we look at the most. Korea is an interesting market in that the students that are going are across the board doing all kinds of different things. They're not focused on one field. You have other countries that where they're almost 100% STEM or, you know, focused in certain areas, but across the board, Koreans are studying in arts and humanities and social sciences. And the graduate market went down a little bit more than the undergraduate market. But Koreans are also very interested in OPT, which is an optional practical training. It's an opportunity for students to do internships, get paid, and work after their graduation. So after they graduate from college or from university, from a graduate school, they could do optional practical training. It's a great opportunity to get really meaningful work experience, and that's really popular. And that we did see that numbers are relatively stable there, so we know it's of interest to Korean students. English programs are starting to drop down. There's so many other options available. And one thing to note is that for short-term English programs, that's often the result of a partnership between two institutions, so a Korean institution and a sister institution in the United States. And what we are seeing is the Korean institutions no longer want to just send students. They want to receive American students. They're getting students from all over the world. They have fantastic programs. In English, you could get your degree here. You could do credited courses. You can even get internships and study in the STEM fields and business and do all these amazing things, but American students aren't really coming. The numbers are growing, but they're not growing in any way near what Korean schools want. So I think that's one reason we're seeing things drop off. We're not seeing really equitable relationships as much. And we're working on that. We just did a conference focused on U.S. study abroad to Korea, but that I think for the short-term English market, that's one thing that's affecting it.
Oh, that's really interesting. KEI actually we have a blog and we recently published a piece about how Chinese is becoming more popular as a second language among Korean students. So I wonder if that's really affecting this as well, if people are becoming more and more interested in learning Chinese, trying to get jobs in China.
Yeah, if you look at the numbers, China recently overtook the United States as the top recipient of students from Korea, but the statistics show that Koreans are going for short-term programs more in China than they are in the United States. In the U.S., there are short-term programs and English language programs and that type of thing, but we do see a lot more students doing degree programs, whether they're undergraduate, graduate, PhD, and they're staying longer, having a bigger impact, and having that exchange of ideas and everything that we love so much as Fulbright alums we are.
Well, this has been a really interesting conversation. I will definitely be watching the trends and the numbers going forward. But before we go, is there anything else that you think it would be important for our listeners to know?
I think we'd like people to know that Korean students are really fantastic. They've been in the United States for many, many years. They've been driving lots of change. Fulbright grantees that went to the United States have really helped shape the educational market here, and the landscape of academia here is really shaped by Fulbrighters and people who were part of that pioneering generation. And I think the market has a long way to go in terms of turning around, but there's so much potential. There are students out there that are not getting the information, and that's what excites me about being in this job, is being able to reach those kids from a small town that maybe only has a few people, in those schools that have students who've never thought, you know, hey, I could study in the United States too. So there's a lot of potential for the outreach, and there's a lot of potential for students to come to Korea as well. So if people listening to this are want to visit some place that, you know, not a lot of Americans are going to, Korea is really a fantastic place. It's not just about learning Korean or history. You can come here, you can learn almost anything. I traveled to universities all around Korea, and they just have such fantastic programs that would be awesome for your resume. So I just think, you know, in spite of what numbers look like, it really is an exciting market to be in. And Education USA is really focusing on Korea. And we'll see what happens in the next few years.
All right. Well, thank you again for your time and for providing more context on this and teaching us a little bit more about what's been going on in the study abroad market in Korea.
You're welcome.
Thanks, everyone, for once again joining us here on Korean Context. I hope you enjoyed this episode. If you did, please feel free to subscribe to our podcast wherever you get your podcasts and join us again next week for another great episode.